Make sure you are in fellowship, and let's continue on here. Let's reread our two verses before we continue on. But in those days, after that tribulation, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light. And as you know, typically you want to use the New American Standard Version as your Bible of choice because, number one, it is most accurate from the original translation perspective. And number two, they're pretty consistent in doing things like the, and other versions can be, but the latter part of verse 24 and the first part of verse 25 should be in all caps, which tells you that this is an allusion to an Old Testament citation. The sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light and the stars will be falling from heaven. And the powers that are in the heavens will be shaken. All right, point one here. We have done the exegesis of this. We are ready to do the exposition. Verse 24 begins with the strong adversative conjunction, Allah. And this is a marker in the Greek to signal a complete shift in thinking to, you would use, say, the minor, the less, duh, that conjunction, if you wanted to signal a smaller change. When you see Allah, the strong adversative, it tips off the interpreter that there's a big change in view here somewhere. And we can see what the big change is. It's moving chronologically from the events of Daniel's 70th week, which become very horrific beginning just prior to the midpoint, from about the fifth month prior to that, right on through. And so he's been discussing these events during here, but now he moves right to here, right to the very end of it, and tells you, and this Allah here helps point out to the interpreter that there is a shift. So this introduces somewhat of a shift in the form of a chronological advancement. Two, however, it should be observed that the shift in subject matter begins with those days, which have been referenced twice in this chapter and refer to the beginning of the latter portion of Daniel's 70th week. We saw it in verse 17. Woe to those who are pregnant and nursing in those days. Why? Because the command is going to go to flee, and it's going to be very difficult for them. And verse 19, those days. And that moves from, say, the middle of Daniel's 70th week all the way through dealing with the last half of it. Well, three, thus one should understand that Jesus is still dealing with the events of Daniel's 70th week, focusing on the latter portion that will culminate in the second advent. And as we point out, this final 7 years of human history is a fulfillment of the prophecies contained in Daniel 9, 24 and following. And it is bounded on one side by the church age, the ending of the church age, which is, we're close to that, the event we call the rapture, where believers are taken off the planet. Then it moves into this period, and this end is bounded by the second advent. This is bounded by the bodily return of Jesus Christ from the third heaven, where he has been seated at the right hand of God for some 2,000 years, just waiting. And what's he waiting on? The Lord says, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool. And that is, metaphoric language to express the fact that Jesus is viewed as putting his feet up on his enemies who are simply his resting place. And so ultimately to put them under his feet, to make them a footstool, signifies complete domination over his enemies. That no one is going to compete with him ever again. This was not the purpose at the first advent. The purpose at the first advent was the bearing of sins. And he didn't come to judge. He said that. I did not come to judge, but to save. At this point, that's not why I'm here. Second advent, he's coming to judge. And he's mad. And people don't like to think about that. Well, what if God got mad? Well, you don't want God losing his temper, let me tell you that. And when the Lord returns, he's going to be angry. And we use this anthropopathism, ascribing to the Lord some emotion he doesn't really have, to express that righteousness has now been violated to the point where it's going to be judgment, just unrelenting judgment. So, four, there's no question here that the latter portion of verses 24 through verse 27 is taken from the Old Testament prophets. The language of verse 24 most closely resembles the Septuagint of Isaiah 13:10, Now, if you look in Isaiah 13:10, you will not see the translation that is exactly within the New American Standard. For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not flash forth their light. The sun will be dark when it rises, and the moon will not shed its light. Now, why are these verses, why did they not read exactly like Mark? Well, the answer is found in the fact that the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation of the Hebrew Old Testament. The Hebrew Old Testament is called the Masoretic Text. We usually abbreviate it MT for short, the Masoretic Text. That is the Hebrew Old Testament Bible, written, and if you ever see a Hebrew Bible, you'll find it's weird because the back cover is the front and the first page is the last, because you read it left to right, or right to left, rather. So the Hebrew line would start over here and you read it this way. It goes completely opposite Western thinking in terms of language. So, the Masoretic text, the Hebrew, was translated in about, somewhere around 200 BC, roughly, approximately, by 70 scholars. The Hebrew was translated into Greek. Well, the Greek is referred to, because there were 70 scholars, the abbreviation is the LXX, or the Septuagint. And the Septuagint is the Greek translation of the Hebrew. And so, when the New Testament was written, many of the authors, of course, were familiar with the Greek version. It doesn't mean they were not aware of the Hebrew version, or that they didn't cite the Hebrew version, because in some cases, they would cite the Hebrew word for word. I mean, they would use Greek to do it, but they would cite the Hebrew. So they're aware of all of this, but so when they write, many times the quotations in the New Testament are taken from the Septuagint. So Isaiah 13:10 prophesies that. The language of verse 25 most closely resembles that of Isaiah 34:4, with direct reference to prophetic Edom. By the way, the Isaiah 13 passage is one that is found in the context of the destruction of the United States. Isaiah 34:4 says, "And all the host of heaven will wear away, and the sky will be rolled up like a scroll. And all their hosts will also wither away as a leaf withers from the vine, or as one withers from the fig tree." So there you have sort of the stars of heaven. Their hosts will wither away. And this is a direct reference to prophetic Edom. "For my sword is satiated in heaven, but it will descend for judgment upon Edom and upon the people I have devoted to destruction. The Lord will, the sword of the Lord is filled with blood." So when, obviously, this time there's no more Mr. Nice Guy when the Lord returns. This is not going to be a period of mercy or grace or anything else. This is going to be a period of unrelenting judgment and slaughter. And the world, again, is not prepared for this. Verse 6, the Lord has a great slaughter there at the end of, in the land of Edom. And Edom is, strangely enough, also, as you find out, when you do a comparative study of Old Testament prophetic passages, what you find is that there are many, many parallels between prophetic Edom and prophetic Babylon, or Babel, as it's called in the Hebrew. Why are there parallels? Well, because both prophetically refer to the United States. And why use these terms? Well, Babel means land of confusion. Like that song a few years back, many years back now, in the 80s from Genesis. "Can't you see this is the land of confusion?" Oh yeah, it is. Black's white, up's down. The Supreme Court's trying to figure out if queers should get married. Or be allowed to marry. No, they shouldn't. You know, the Bible defines marriage for us. So we'll go with the biblical definition. Let them debate all they want. Well, this is the land of confusion. We've embraced everything that's wrong, pretty much. We have rejected our spiritual and cultural heritage on which this country was founded. And they're going after individual freedoms and rights to the point where there's going to eventually be a camera on every corner. You will not be able to move about in this country without being on film somewhere. And they're not filmed now because they're using digital recorders, but you get the idea. Right now, if you go to Ybor City, you can't go anywhere there. They can't see you. You're on a camera somewhere, everywhere in that town, in that little period place in there. Well, obviously, you know, they have some, you know, less than savory goings on up there, but that's their business. But that's the way it's going to eventually be everywhere. And by the time of Antichrist, he's got to be able to track every person in the entire world, pretty much. And be able to find out if they've got the mark or not. So, why Babel for the U.S.? Land of confusion. Why Edom? Edom is another name for Esau. And Esau was the one who traded his birthright, his heritage, for a mess of pottage. For a little bit of red soup. So this is a very good name for code name for the U.S. as well. Because, well, again, we've traded away our spiritual heritage for what? Relativism? For a society that doesn't know straight up anymore from straight down? People are so confused about moral realities. They argue that you can't legislate morality, but you can legislate guns. Well, wait a second. Aren't guns, just like everything else, a matter of morality? Can't guns be used for good and bad? I mean, there are people that use guns for nothing but hunting and, you know, a self-sufficiency lifestyle. So are we going to take away their guns too? I'm not. I wouldn't even want to be any part of that. But again, Edom is a good name because we've traded away what's important for what is useless, what is worthless. And so you see that the codename Edom also has the very same sort of language that you find in the prophetic Babylon passages, which are, by the way, Isaiah 13, 21, 47, and Jeremiah 50 and 51. And then you find passages like Isaiah 34, codename Edom, and also then there's the book of Obadiah, which gives you a similar passage on prophetic Edom. And it talks about you who dwell in the clefts of the rock, whose position seems unassailable. Why Edom also? Because Edom was a country that had never been really militarily invaded and conquered, much as the U.S. has not. We have never been invaded militarily, although, you know, little Un over there is making his noises. But he doesn't have the technology to do it. He's just blowing off at the mouth. But he may have the technology to make South Korea's life pretty miserable. And he intends to, it looks like, certainly. But these are just historical developments that come. Well, when you compare the language of Babylon and Edom, verse 10, it will not be quenched day and night. The land will become burning pitch. Its smoke will go up from ever, from generation to generation. It will be desolate. None will ever pass through it forever and ever. The pelican and the hedgehog will possess it. The owl and the raven will dwell in it. He will stretch out over it the line of desolation and the plumb line of emptiness. Its nobles, there is no one there whom they may proclaim king. And all its princes will become nothing. Thorns will come up in its fortified towers, nestles and thistles in fortified cities, and it will be the haunt of jackals and the abode of ostriches. And so, other than that, guess what? No, nothing's going to ever reside substantially, not just the U.S., but nothing will ever live to speak of in the Western Hemisphere again. And yet, this will continue throughout the millennium as a witness. People will see the smoke ascending from this forever. That literally, this is going to be going on until the new heavens and the new earth. Obviously, that will change it. But there's going to be this witness of God took out the most powerful nation on the planet during Daniel's 70th week. And what do you think that lesson will say to the people living following that in the millennium? Don't mess with God. That will be a strong signal not to mess with God. Now, we know that at the outset, most of them are believers. Because you go in the millennium, you got to be a believer to survive into there. But that won't last forever. Well, the language here now, also of verse 26, most closely resembles that. Now, we didn't get verse 26 here yet. But the language there, you will see the Son of Man coming in clouds. That most resembles Daniel 7:13. in that prophecy. And as we know, this was Jesus' favorite way of referring to himself, the Son of Man. Why? Because it indicates he's fully human. The Son of Man makes him a human being. Now, he's God the Son, obviously, still in his deity, he can't change. And this is the mystery of the incarnation. How can God, who is infinite, come into union with a finite man? And yet he did. We don't know how he did. There's a mystery there. But Daniel 7:13, and I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like a son of man was coming up to the Ancient of Days, and he was presented before him. And to him was given dominion, glory, and a kingdom, that all the peoples, nations, and men of every language might serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which will not pass away. And his kingdom is one which will never be destroyed. So point D, the language of verse 27, appears to be a compilation of ideas taken from Deuteronomy 34 and Zechariah 2:6, and we will look at that more when we get to those verses. So 5, thus when one considers this section, it is not too wise to focus too much on the phrase after that tribulation, since Jesus is still dealing with events that come to pass in those days. That should be that come to pass in those days. And 6, while many have applied the general term tribulation to the entirety of Daniel's 70th week, the tribulation mentioned to this point originates just prior to the midpoint of Daniel's 70th week and deals with the time of flight, which is likely, again, relatively short. I don't think it will take forever for people to evacuate Judea. I would think they would be able to do that. If you're going to get out, that would be done within a matter of weeks or months at the most. And maybe not even that long. So 7, the reader is not told what will cause the conditions that are described in the latter portion of verse 24. Only that these things will be realities. He doesn't tell us, why is the sun darkened? What happens during that time that creates this? So 8, beginning in the third year of Daniel's 70th week and continuing throughout the rest of that 7-year period, many catastrophic things will befall the earth and its inhabitants. And 9, the fact that the languages of verse 24 comes directly from passages about the destruction of prophetic Babylon and Edom would suggest that some of these conditions are associated in some way with that event. And 10, while the United States, codenamed Babylon, the land of confusion, and codenamed Edom, trading away our spiritual heritage for government cheese, will be destroyed in 1 hour of one day. See, that we have traded away. Initially, what was the thought in American history that really that dealt with the founding of this country? And it was self-sufficiency and religious freedom. And specifically, when we talk about religious freedom, we mean Christianity. That was the purpose. That they left England to get away from the C of E, the Church of England, which is basically just a sort of a bastardized approach to Catholicism. Only worse, because, well, I don't know if you can say it's worse, but they're both bad. But instead of the Pope, now they made the King Pope, essentially. This all happened under Henry VIII and continued, if you know that history, where he had a fight with Rome, essentially because he kept wanting to kill his wives and marry other ones, and they said, you know, we shouldn't be doing that. you know, we can't really sanction that. He says, well, I'm not listening to the Pope. I'm now the new Pope. And so that's how that all happened. Well, that situation continued with that church becoming just as oppressive to real Christianity as anything was. And that's why they fled England. It was for the practice of biblical Christianity. And also in the idea of self-sufficiency. They never believed that we should have a big government. You go read any of the founding fathers, they were against a big government, they were against a central bank, they were against so many things that we have rejected and now embraced, that ultimately are going to do us in. And we were warned. We have voices in history that warned us, don't do this. Alexander Hamilton was absolutely against any kind of a central bank. And yet, this is the way it went. And we've been told over and over again, stay away from this, stay away from this, stay away from this. Well, under Woodrow Wilson and Colonel House and some of their buddies, they got it foisted upon the nation. And they set us up with such glorious things as Social Security, which is neither social nor secure. which is an odd name for it. And so you pay in all your life and you hope you live long enough to get some of it back. Well, the government was never designed to take care of people, but the government, we have become a welfare state in many ways. The government wants to supply all these things. Why? Because then the citizenry becomes dependent upon the government. That was exactly what our founding fathers warned us against. And so all the laws, essentially, there are very few things reserved to the federal government, and they specifically stated that all things not reserved to the federal government in this document are reserved to the states. And the states have the right to make their own laws. Well, now, with the government cheese, if you want the government cheese, you got to go along with the government, the feds. And so they do not encourage state laws, because they think they supersede state laws, when in fact the Constitution says they didn't. And we've traded away everything the Constitution says, largely. Now we want to trade away our rights to own guns. By the way, I don't own a gun, so if you think I have a hidden agenda here, I don't. But I can see how wrong this all is. And even without being a gun owner, I can see how wrong this is. Why? Because the first step in anarchy and in the government essentially taken over in a complete autocracy where they run it from the top is to get rid of the weapons. This is what they did in Nazi Germany. Does anybody remember history? This is what they did. And when they started taking away the rights of one segment and the people allowed this to happen, what happened? Eventually they took away the rights of everybody. And this is exactly the same path our country's headed down. And frankly, to be honest with you, had our government existed now, in the late 1700s, early 1800s, there would be another civil war, frankly, because they wouldn't have put up with this. The South was very much, and I'm not defending the South or the North, either one, but the big deal was this was an argument against federal government stepping in and running to run the states. And whatever people think of slavery or don't think of it, number one, slavery has always existed in the world. It is always going to exist. And this idea that we've somehow eliminated slavery from history, we have not. That is just fallacious. You see in the book of Revelation, he says they trade in slaves and the souls of men. People are still slaves, whether they want to admit it or not. But now they're slaves to a bunch of other things. So we've traded all that away. Well, guess what? This is the way it is. So while the United States here will be destroyed in 1 hour of one day, the continuing effects of that event will extend throughout the final half of Daniel's 70th week. Revelation 18 has so many interesting facets to it. And all the notes are online. You can access them, certainly. But Revelation 18 is so much different than, say, Revelation 17. But name me a time in history, any time in history, where a massive superpower has been destroyed in 1 hour of one day. There isn't any. This is language that is beyond parallel. We have nothing to compare this to. And we're told that this is a major world power, Babylon. All the nations, verse 3, have drunk of the wine of the passion of her immorality. She's affected every nation on the planet. With our, quote, we're the cowboys with the white hat, and we're going to ride in and we're going to bring you commercialism and democracy. These are what we offer. This is the drugs we get people hooked on. Money in the details of life to where they think they got to have it. And so they will trade away, literally. I mean, if you do any, Becky's got, I think, a couple of books. One of them is called Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And this is insider information about how our government goes in and systematically dismantles a nation in order to take it over for Nike and Sandoz and all the rest of them. And we've done it repeatedly. And then once we're finished with them, we abandon them. We sold the Shah of Iran out, and then we ended up with what? The Ayatollah Khomeini. And now look what we got in Iran. We've sold out many of our allies. You know, we go down to Panama, we sell them out after we've exploited the resources and done what we wanted to do. So, and again, people don't know history. They don't study this stuff. It's not taught in schools what we're doing. So why would they? I mean, you got to expect they're not going to know this. Well, verse 10, the kings of the earth who committed acts of immorality will weep and lament over her when they see the smoke of her burning, standing at a distance because of the fear of her torment. See, nobody's going to want to come near a nuclear radioactive desert. Everybody's going to say, oh, pass. Hey, you want to go see over there what God did? Uh-uh. Nope. No idea. Don't want to see it. But why? Because number one, it's radioactive. It's deadly. Nobody's going to approach it. And how long will the U.S. continue to be radioactive during the millennium? We don't know. Maybe the whole thing. No, we're not told. And the merchants of the earth weep and mourn. Verse 10, because 1 hour your judgment has come. And the merchants of the earth weep and mourn over her because no one buys their cargoes anymore. No more Hyundais, no more Kias, no more Hondas, no more any of the Toyotas, no more circuit boards, no more computers, no more cell phones, no more iPods, no more iPads, no more whatever you want to import, no more diamonds, no more spices, no more all the things that we import, which largely now we have become the largest importer of world goods in the world. There's just no question that we are. And yet, cargoes of silver, and it tells you what the cargoes are. Everything that we bring in. All manner of things. Perfumes. Wines. I mean, do you know how much wine is imported into the U.S.? Just wine. And then you've got the other spirits that are made in other countries. But just that. Cigars. But of course, we know the Cuban cigars are evil. But the other cigars are fine. So, you know. We know that. There's an evil cigar, and then there's other good cigars. But the fact is, what's that all about? God, the president has saved us from cigars? By, you know, this nonsense with Cuba that we've done over the years? We got all this, and the merchants who became rich stood at a distance. Verse 15. Oh, yeah, they became rich. China, you think China and India have not prospered because of direct result of American consumerism, and then of course then we export jobs to them to boot on top of it. And forget, you know, the other places that prospered at many levels. Verse 17, in 1 hour such wealth has been laid waste. And they threw dust on their heads in verse 18 and said, what city is like the great city? When you consider the United States, and now suddenly there's no more Los Angeles, there's no more New York, there's no more Tampa, no more Miami, no more South Beach. Take your talents there all you want. It's going to be gone. It'll all be gone. And the massive cities, Dallas, Fort Worth, the Metroplex, how many millions of people live in these areas? A bunch. And then verse 19, they threw dust in their heads and were crying and weeping and saying, woe, 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 the great city. All who had ships at sea became rich by her wealth. Do you know how many ships bring in goods here every day? No, but go research it and you find out it's massive. It's incredibly large. And again, in 1 hour she has been laid waste. Name me a destruction that this could fit. Any destruction. In an hour of a day? It's unheard of that a nation could go down that fast in history. And to give them a view of this, verse 21, the strong angel took up a stone like a great millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, so will Babylon, the great city, be thrown down with violence and will not be found any longer. And just as quick as you could take the Statue of Liberty and chunk it into the Atlantic, pew, never to be seen again, that's what's going to happen to the U.S. And we don't know what millstone the angel picks up, but if he took the Statue of Liberty, that would be a pretty strong signal, wouldn't it? He grabs the Statue of Liberty out there off Ellis Island and just does a hook shot into the Atlantic with it. Well, that would send a message, I would think. But will they get it? No, the answer is no, they won't. Well, 11, it is clear from the trumpet destructions that the destruction of 1/4 of the globe will have monumental and disastrous effects on the earth itself. It is clear that there will also be alterations in how the sun and moon appear. Revelation 6, 8. And this passage was one that troubled me at first, and I really had to spend a fair amount of time on it until I finally cracked it, but I realized I was looking at the wrong thing. I looked in verse 8, and behold, a pale horse, an ashen horse. And he who sat on it had the name of Death. He's talking, this horse has, one who sat on him, rather, the horse itself has this sort of death power. If you've ever seen anyone who's dead, or who's real close to death right before they die, their pallor becomes very different. Their skin changes. You can literally see it. You can see the life going out of them. And this is what this is talking about here. A form of death and destruction. Death and Hades followed him. Authority was given to them over a fourth of the earth to kill with sword, famine, and with pestilence. And my first mistake was, I made the mistake most interpreters have made when they came to this verse. And they read one fourth of the earth as one fourth of the population. It doesn't say that. It says one fourth of the earth. Because later on, there's going to be a phrase, one third of mankind. Well, that refers to population. What this refers to is the surface area of the earth. One fourth of the surface area of the earth is going to be rendered null and void. It's going to be rendered useless. And in fact, everybody on that fourth will eventually die. Well, I struggled and struggled and struggled with this verse. And then I thought, wait a minute, one fourth of the earth, maybe he's talking about land. I went and looked, and guess what? The Western Hemisphere comprises 25.2% of the land mass of the earth. Huh, funny. Well, not funny, haha. But funny as in, this is the exact figure he said would be. One fourth of the earth. You say, well, it's 25.2%. It's not exactly a fourth. Okay. But it is close enough to a fourth that you wouldn't argue with it. I wouldn't quibble with it. So, it turns out, from North America, South America, Central America, all the Western Hemisphere put together, that it's about 25.2% of the land mass, and it's all subject to death, as it says here. To kill with sword, that is military, dying in military combat. That will be the initial people that die from the nuclear strike. And with famine, the fallout from this means that all food's going to be toxic, water's going to be toxic, and people will gradually starve to death that don't die in the initial deal. And with pestilence, pestilence is a weird word, but I think radioactivity qualifies as pestilence. Radiation, one of the things we do know, every doctor knows this, every nurse knows it, every dental assistant knows this, that radiation is dangerous. And that radiation never improves an organism at all. Radiation only harms organisms. That's why when they take your x-rays, they're covered in lead. Because they know this will kill you if you get enough of it. And so we know that radiation is always harmful to any organism, but in most cases, enough radiation will kill it. And so you have this situation, and then the wild beasts of the earth are the literal animals. What's going to happen in the animal kingdom when there's nothing left but hyenas and badgers and jackals? They're going to want to eat. So you see these I know there's this big deal today with vampires and zombies and werewolves and all of this. And they have these zombie movies where people are the living dead. Well, guess what? That's not far off. And the ones that do survive are just going to be prey for the animals, the vicious animals that are going to want to eat. And at some point, they're going to lack ability to defend themselves. So they're torn apart by vicious animals. The ones who make it all that way through, that's their final end. Well, that's even worse. Why bother living? So again, that's going to happen in verse 12. And when he broke the sixth seal, there was a great earthquake. Well, this is the effects of a one-shot nuclear strike on the Western Hemisphere. A great earthquake doesn't even sum it up. We are talking about the largest earthquake ever recorded in history. This is going to be off the Richter scale. They're not going to be able to measure it, what this is going to be. And the sun became black as sackcloth made with hair. This is from the nuclear plume that's going to extend into the upper atmosphere. And it's going to affect the way the sun looks. It's going to affect your ability to even see the sun. If you can imagine the vaporized remains of millions of people, the vaporized remains of millions of automobiles, millions of buildings, tons of debris and dirt, Everything that's vaporized in that initial strike will just become smoke up in the air. And the smoke is going to be intense. The smoke itself is radioactive. It is radioactive. And it's going to block out the sun. And the whole moon became like blood, that when you are able to finally see through it, the effect is that the moon is going to be bright red looking. And you've probably looked up at times and seen like an orange moon. This is going to be, the idea of the symbolism of red here is the blood, is the destruction and the slaughter that's involved in all of this. Well, 12, it is clear from the book of Revelation that the sun being darkened refers to the increased rotation speed of the earth, making days only 16 hours rather than the current 24. That's we have seen in Revelation 8:12. A part of the daylight, a third of the day, was darkened and did not shine, and in the night in the same way. So you've got the earth's rotation speeded up on its axis, causing time, we might say, in a sense, to go faster. Days will go quicker because there'll be a third shorter. However, point 13 is equally clear that the more disastrous judgments await mankind following the destruction of the Western Hemisphere, particularly a judgment on the sun itself. Now that is seen in Revelation 16, 8 through 11. And now we are down to the bowl judgment. And these must happen in pretty rapid fire fashion. The general consensus of interpreters over the years has been that the bowl judgments can't take much more than months, because mankind cannot survive very long under these conditions. And all flesh, he said, if these days weren't shortened, all flesh would be destroyed. No flesh would be saved. And so here you had Revelation 16:8, and the fourth angel poured out his bowl on the sun, and it was given to scorch men with fire. And men were scorched with fierce heat, and they blasphemed the name of God. When your low is 112, what's the high going to be that day? It's going to be rough. How much is great heat? How much can the human condition stand? And by the way, given all the things that are going to be have gone on by this time, how much air conditioning and power is there going to be? You've got some tremendous problems here because, again, anything that's based on a generator that requires a certain amount of oxygen and a certain mixture of carbon dioxide to burn is going to be radically changed to where many machines are not going to work. That's going to be one of the problems. So why don't they just go into the air conditioning if it's that hot? They can't. They can't get away from it. It's that hot. Then they'll worry about global warming. This is your global warming right here. And it's coming, but not like they think. That's the irony. And then 10, the fifth angel poured out his bowl on the throne of the beast, and his kingdom became darkened. And they gnawed their tongues because of the pain. Now, some have suggested here that the sun goes out, that this is how it gets darkened. Well, number one, it doesn't say that. And so my suspicion is, it's now like an oven. It's black and it's dark and you can't get away from it. Now, if you've been here, those of us who've lived here a while, I mean, you can be through some pretty horrific Florida summers. They're going to seem like a walk at the beach, literally. That's going to seem like nothing when the heat index is 115 and there's not a breath of air. And you've been out there like that. I'm sure I have. When I first moved down here, 89 was one of the hottest years on record. Every day the heat index was 110 to 115. And I wisely get a job in a cabinet shop. It was oppressive. Big metal building, no air conditioning. And not a breath of air flowing in it. And so it was awful. Well, that is going to be nothing compared to what goes on here. Well, 14, by the end of Daniel's 70th week, there is some indication that the sun will undergo a massive change that will result in it being extinguished as the bowl judgments unfold. And that is what is in view in verse 24. Now, even if the sun is darkened, it doesn't suggest, you may lose the light of it, but that's no guarantee the heat's going to go necessarily. A nuclear reaction, which is what the sun is, it's a giant nuclear fission going on all the time. Even if you could lose the light of it, it doesn't indicate that necessarily the reactions are going to stop. Now, whatever mechanism God uses to do this, we don't know. Now, this is well beyond the pale of anything science can even discuss. We don't know how he's going to do it. We just know he's going to do it. And at that level, I don't really, does it matter how he does it? Doesn't matter how he does it if he does it. Well, 15, that is what is in view in verse 24 when Mark states that the sun will be darkened. And so what begins with less sun during the 8-hour day will be escalated by God's judgments to scorch mankind and then possibly to lose some or even most of its energy. 16, the events in Revelation 16 seem similar to what would happen during a mini nova. During this event, a star becomes many times hotter and brighter, then fades from its original intensity. But let's face it, that doesn't happen over weeks or months. That takes a massive amount. That takes a long time. Stars don't do this just overnight. And yet it appears in this situation, in these scenarios, that the sun's going to undergo this dramatic alteration in a very quick fashion. Faster than you could account for it. Why? Well, because God's doing it. And he has all the power. In 17, although many interpreters do not even attempt to provide a mechanism for the effects that are detailed in Revelation, the two primary suggestions have been that God moves the earth or sun so they are in greater proximity. Well, I don't think that happens. I mean, I don't think he alters the orbits of things around the sun. He could. I mean, he certainly has the power. All you have to do is push the earth. You know, we're at the optimum distance from the sun. 93 million miles is just about right. A million more, one way or the other, would have catastrophic effects. So could God just nudge the earth closer to the sun? Sure, I suppose he could. And that will have the same effect. Or the sun itself simply increases its heat output somehow. Which, again, we're not told the mechanism. Well, 18, the fact is that there is a readily documented cycle for solar activity. Sunspots, coronal mass ejections, and flares, which peaks about every 11 years. The latest peak was in 2001. We're kind of heading into an increased period of solar activity, and we've seen it already. I mean, you've seen, if you paid any attention to the news back a few years ago, the electricity went out all over Canada. Not all over it, but over a big section of it, and even some into our northeast because of a solar problem, a solar flare. And if that can do that in a small way, what could we do on a global scale if God's really mad? A lot. Well, 19, although sunspots themselves produce only minor effects on solar emissions, the magnetic activity that accompanies the sunspots can produce dramatic changes in the ultraviolet and soft X-ray emission levels. Solar storms during the peak period of sunspots caused power failures in Canada and Sweden, made some computers crash in the United States, and destroyed or damaged several satellites. During the peak in 89, a blast of solar energy arriving at the Earth shut down the electrical power grid in Quebec, leaving 6 million customers in the dark for a day. That was just one little flare. That was just nothing, in a sense. And these flares damaged several man-made satellites and caused smaller outages all over. And there are countless times when large sunspots have affected similar damage to various electrical systems on Earth. So, in addition to the judgment of God, what is the effect that these things are having, again, on men and machines and other factors? You have to consider. What if all the electricity goes out? That's going to be very difficult. Do you know how dependent we are on electricity? Most Americans, I'm not sure we could live without it. I mean, if you're thrown back into the Ice Age now, suddenly, life would be very difficult. Obviously, and that won't happen, but... Well, 20, while many of the problems with sunspots are magnetic or electrical in nature, there is some evidence that the sun is getting hotter and may have something to do with global warming. However, in Revelation, we're not talking about the type of global warming the environmentalists are. It's gone up 1.1 degree Fahrenheit in the last 100 years. That is, by any standards, negligible. A 1% deviation over 100 years is negligible. It means nothing in terms of the big scheme of things. But given what we know about Revelation, now obviously God's going to increase this many, many times. It's not going to be just like 1 degree. But a sudden burst of heat and energy will make the earth seem, quote, hotter than hell. 22, the nova is also called a helium flash, which would be caused by helium fusion reaction spontaneously igniting in the sun. And the sun gets its energy from a hydrogen fusion that goes on deep within it. And this reaction generates a lot of helium, which builds up deep in the sun. Again, now, you know, for those of you who remember your chemistry, you understand that in these nuclear reactions, certain byproducts are produced. Well, the reaction in the hydrogen reaction, helium is produced. That is one of the byproducts. When a critical concentration is reached, a helium fusion reaction will spontaneously ignite, which would cause a large increase in the sun's output of energy. But the reaction won't last long because the helium will soon be used up. And the sun will go back to something at least close to what it was previously. And so there's a scientific mechanism whereby you could explain this sudden burst of heat at the Earth, and it is a helium reaction. So 23, this fits quite well with the fact that the bowl judgments are falling right at the end of Daniel's 70th week and do not occur over an extended period of time. Additionally, it explains why the days were shortened, since even minor changes to the sun could exterminate all life. I mean, let's face it, everybody who has ever studied basic science from fifth grade on knows that all life and everything on planet Earth is contingent upon that sun. Absent that sun, and it functioning the way it's supposed to, everything on Earth can be dramatically altered and very quickly. Very quickly. Well, 24, the nova won't exterminate all life because of the massive evaporation of water that will occur when the heat strikes the planet, the waters of the planet. The evaporated water will quickly form a cloud blanket around the Earth, which will shield the surface from the full intensity of the light and heat. And 26, direct sunlight will be deadly. Anyone exposed to direct sunlight for even a few minutes may result in severe sunburn and or skin cancer, if not outright death. This is going to be something that you just would not be able to take, but for very, very, and I mean limited, we're talking seconds would be the massive, the most amount you would want to be exposed to that. Well, 27, it will be virtually impossible to find a cool place, except perhaps deep underground in deep mines or tunnels. However, there will be a few, probably only the elite, who can find shelter in such places. Revelation 6:15 deals with that. When these people realize what's coming upon them, that the God of heaven has now decided to execute judgment, then the kings of the earth and the great men and the commanders and the rich and the strong, and every slave and free man hid themselves in the caves and among the rocks of the mountains. Well, number one, they're trying to avoid the heat, for one thing. That would explain why they go to the caves. I mean, the best protection in that case would be the massive rock formations above you. That would be your best protection, your best bet, really. And they said to the mountains and to the rocks, "Fall on us and hide us from the presence of him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb." That's an irony there. You're supposed to laugh when you read that. The wrath of the Lamb. You don't just view, you know, Mary had a little lamb. It wasn't meaner in hell and killed everybody. It just followed Mary around. It was a little lamb. It was nice. It was fluffy and you could pet it. Well, here you got a mad, angry lamb. A brutalizing lamb that's going to destroy the world, in fact. That's supposed to set up a contradiction in your mind where you recognize, hey, this is interesting. "For the great day of their wrath has come, and who is able to stand?" Well, no one. At 28, even at night, it will not get cool, since one of the effects of the cloud blanket will be to moderate temperatures all over the world. In fact, it may be very similar to what went on during the time of the vapor canopy. The effects of that, as we know, shielded the sun, the earth rather, from the harmful radiation effects of the sun. And this accounts for the longer lifespans of the antediluvians, those who lived prior to the flood. Why did they live? Or is the Bible an exaggeration when it says Adam lived 930 years and he died? No, it's 930 years. Moses knows the difference between a day, a week, a year, and a month. Moses was not stupid. Moses was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. So anyone that reads the Bible says, well, you know, Moses didn't know. Moses was likely one of the smartest men on the planet at that time. And would you suggest to me that no smart man on the planet right now knows the difference between a day and a month or a week and a year? Of course they do. Well, so why did those people live so long? Well, the vapor canopy that surrounded the earth, the waters above, as it's called in Genesis, shielded the earth. And the earth was essentially this giant terrarium. And if you're familiar with that, there's not a lot of fluctuation and deviation within a terrarium in terms of temperature and humidity. It remains fairly constant. And the earth did. It was. But that's not the way it's going to be in the future. Well, again, the cloud blanket will moderate temperatures, and what heat was there from the flash of the sun is going to more or less be trapped in there. It's not going to dissipate. And this is one of the things we know. Anybody that knows anything about meteorology, you'll hear them talk about radiational cooling. And that is when there's no cloud cover, and we just saw a recent blast of it here, the humidity drops low and high pressure's over you, that the second that sun goes down, the temperatures start plummeting. But if you have cloud cover, it moderates. It doesn't allow the radiational cooling into space. Well, this is going to trap all the heat in Antichrist's kingdom. So now they're gnawing their tongues in pain, probably in darkness, but still very, very hot. Again, like an oven. Okay, well, our time is gone. We'll have to stop there, and we will continue on with this on Tuesday. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for the opportunity to fellowship in the things of your word. We thank you for the information that prepares us for the future, and pray that you would sanctify this information to our souls in Christ's name. Amen.